Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, July 9th. I hope everyone had a fun and safe Independence Day. That week went by really fast, didn't it? On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about what's up with Medicare Advantage plans, everyone's healthcare privatization darlings. Specifically, we're going to talk about a new Kaiser Family Foundation analysis of Medicare Advantage plan member costs and benefits, a new study on Medicare Advantage plan star ratings and health disparities, and MedPAC's recent recommendation to rebalance the formula Medicare uses to pay Medicare Advantage plans. I know that every time someone rebalances me, I either pay more or someone pays me less. To make sense of it all, our Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
I'm raring to talk about Medicare Advantage, which might, just might, be the most direct path to value-based payment reform.
Interesting. Julie, how about you?
Well, I'm tired and I'm excited for a summer in Seattle.
Very good. Thank you. Now, before we talk about what these three reports say about Medicare Advantage and where it's going, I wanted to ask you about your experiences with Medicare Advantage. Dave, do you know anyone in an MA plan? And if so, do they like it?
Like you, Dave, I'm at an age where many of my contemporaries are enrolling in Medicare. Many even ask me for advice, you know, perish that thought. To the individual, they're enrolling in Medicare Advantage plans and loving it. I guess what's not to like about lower payments and supplemental benefits?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Julie, same thing. Anyone you know in an MA plan, and what is their experience?
Well, no, my mother enrolled in Medigap before I think MA was a thing. And as much as I've tried to convince her that she should move to MA, she's one of those seniors who just likes what she has and doesn't want to change it and thinks that she's going to get short shrift if she does anything different.
Classic. Thanks, Julie.
Don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Right? That's right. My mom is a Medicare Advantage plan member and she loves it. She thinks she has a small drug copay and a free health club membership because her plan loves her back. And I let her keep thinking that. You know, we never talk about underwriting risk or actuarial science, but okay, let's talk about these latest insights on Medicare Advantage. Dave, did anything jump out at you from the Kaiser analysis on member costs and benefits? If so, why are they important from a policy perspective?
Well, several items jumped out at me. Almost two-thirds of MA enrollees will pay no supplemental premium in 2021, except for the Part B premium, which everyone pays. That's $148.50 per month in 2021. There's no need for supplemental insurance, no Medigap like Julie's mom is paying for. MA plans cover all preventative care services with no copays or deductible. I think traditional Medicare does that as well now too, but prevention's a good thing. 90%+ of MA plans include durable medical equipment, Part B drugs, stays in skilled nursing facilities, inpatient hospital stays, non-emergency ambulance services, diagnostic tests and procedures, home health services, et cetera. But they also include a bunch of non-traditional services. Again, over 90% of the MA plans include vision services, telehealth, dental care, fitness memberships, and hearing aids. Special needs plans, which are a subset of Medicare Advantage, often offer even more benefits. Almost 89% of the MA plans offer prescription drug coverage, two-thirds with no premium, Dave, like your mom has. They're loving back their members big time. 15% of people in MA plans pay at least $50 a month for the drug benefit, so not too many, and it's not too burdensome. MA plans have the ability, however, to adjust their cost sharing based on the services received, and most of the time they're pushing that down so they can offer more benefits. But the basic rule seems to be that they'll cover care services as long as they don't cost too much money. Here's some cautions, and they aren't in the Kaiser report, but they're things I think about when I think about Medicare Advantage. There's this concept called lemon dropping, which means that when people become too expensive for MA plans. They can transfer over to traditional Medicare at no cost to them. That's a great relief to the MA plans, but a bigger cost for the federal government. And you got to be really careful that the MA plans aren't designing their benefits to encourage this lemon dropping. I'd actually like to see it go away altogether and have the plans accept the full risk for the members that they take under their wing. And then finally, lessons. Like I tell my friends, there are a lot of MA plans out there. And as you get close to age 65, you'll get flooded with offers. Do your homework, set up a spreadsheet, comparison shop. You can see there are differences, and you should really tailor your plan choice to your specific needs and preferences. So take advantage of your good shopping skills when going into the MA marketplace.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, what's your takeaway from the JAMA study on plan ratings and health disparities? What do the findings mean for health equity and beneficiaries moving forward?
The rating system for Medicare Advantage fails to address racial and socioeconomic inequities, which is becoming a broken record, and a great broken record, honestly, because we're actually paying attention to it. And Dave Myers, who led the study, professor from Brown, said, "It's clear from the study that the way current star ratings are constructed, they are not capturing the full experience of all beneficiaries." And again, we are hearing this over and over again, and the data that AI is using isn't actually representative of populations, et cetera, et cetera. So David Myers went on to say, the fact that Medicare Advantage plans can earn higher star ratings overall if they're not adequately serving minority beneficiaries doesn't provide much of an incentive to address health equity. And to me, this is the important part. Health plans will do what the rating system incentivizes them to do. So if the rating system isn't encouraging health equity, the private markets are not going to jump and do it on their own. You do have some outstanding leaders who are, I think, ahead of this. If you look at something like Sachin Jain at Scan, he's ahead of this. Like, he sees how the ratings don't quite benefit his population, and they're going above and beyond. But, you know, we're playing to the masses here. So in the study, researchers found four conclusions overall, which I think are interesting. First, there was only a modest correlation of simulated star ratings with enrollees of low and high socioeconomic status and between racial and ethnic minority enrollees. So that's interesting. Second, contracts with higher star ratings had larger racial and ethnic disparities than did those with lower star ratings. So that's disturbing. Third, contracts with lower concentrations of individuals with low socioeconomic status and Black or Hispanic individuals had larger disparities and worse quality for these individuals. And fourth, and then I'll talk a little bit about what we're seeing here, they identified both within plan and between plan disparities in the quality of care in the MA program as measured by star ratings. So what we're really seeing in these four conclusions is that there's not good representation of lower socioeconomic status and Black or Hispanic individuals. When there's lower quality of care for these individuals. And even among those with the highest star ratings, you're still seeing some pretty significant disparities. So these findings, if you really dig into the data, are pretty disturbing. And although the study didn't really examine the reasons for all these differences, Myers did say that they had to do with structural barriers, such as reduced access to providers, as well as structural racism. And we've talked about both those things on the show in the last few months, that's for sure. And his main concern, of course, is that plans can earn high ratings and, of course, high financial bonuses based on those ratings, despite providing pretty inequitable care. And they're just, like we said before, not incentivized to address the disparities. Myers thinks that, you know, of the 30 different measures that are factored into the star ratings, adding a measure that judges a plan on how well they address disparities could create more of an incentive for plans to provide high quality care to those beneficiaries. So let's hope we find a way to avoid those groups falling through the cracks.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. You do get what you pay for, especially in healthcare. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I'm still trying to make sense of her first observation that there was weak correlation between star ratings and racial and ethnic assessments and low and high income assessments. However, the evidence that came out of her three other points really does drive home the conclusion that there's inequity in how MA plans market and serve lower income and minority populations. That has been a big problem in healthcare generally. COVID drove it home. It continues to be a big problem in healthcare. And so it's no real surprise that that's an issue within Medicare Advantage. So all the steps that she outlined in terms of trying to articulate this issue and take it on, I think are entirely appropriate, and hope that we go there in a big way. One other point I'd like to make, separate and apart from the health equity discussion, is the concept of ultimately putting MA plans or offering MA plans on the health exchanges, the state-based exchanges and the federal exchange. I think that could do a lot, one, to improve oversight, but also to improve the type and quality of plans offered so that we end up with a more robust marketplace. So the more people going to the exchanges to get their health care in whatever form they qualify, maybe Medicaid managed care we put on the exchanges as well, the more the country as a whole will get used to purchasing healthcare in this market-based way. And I think the offerings will get better and they'll be more appropriate to the specific needs of individuals seeking health insurance.
Thanks, Dave. And now let's talk about what MedPAC says we should do about how we pay Medicare Advantage plans. Julie, what did MedPAC recommend and why did they recommend it?
Well, this is one of the many steps that we're going to see to reduce Medicare spend, or at least I hope we see. As the Congressional Budget Office expects the trust fund that finances Medicare's hospital benefit will become insolvent by 2024. We've been hearing a lot about this. And unfortunately, we've been hearing a lot about these threats for years, and lawmakers have pretty much neglected to deal with the growing deficit. So here we are. So MedPAC suggested several changes to Medicare Advantage plan in terms of its benchmark calculations with the goal of saving money because, Dave, I'm sure you knew this, but of course, I'm the last to know sometimes. Did you know that MA contracting is not and has never produced savings for Medicare?
I didn't know that.
Isn't that amazing?
I knew that. In fact, for a long time, they were overpaying for Medicare Advantage when they had this goal of parity, which is still the goal, but they haven't achieved it yet.
Yeah, it's a dirty little secret and an important one because MA was designed, obviously, to, I think, save money at the end of the day. I guess maybe we're just not there yet. But, you know, all you ever hear about MA is how enrollment is skyrocketing and MA plans are actually now, you know, bidding just 87% of fee-for-service spend in the same market. So that all sounds good, but here we are spending more money. Turns out Medicare actually spends 4% more per capita for beneficiaries in MA plans than those in fee-for-service under the existing benchmark policy. Turns out the benchmark, which is the maximum payment amount for plans, could better reflect geographic variation and end up saving Medicare money. So what does all this mean? Today, Medicare pays MA plans more if they cover an area with lower fee-for-service spending. But depending upon how plans bid in areas where fee-for-service spending is higher relative to this benchmark, they can earn rebates. And those rebates can be used, well, actually, they need to be used to provide extra benefits. And Dave talked about some of these extra benefits before. Thus, large rebates result in plans offering quite notable benefits that really sell these MA plans. So MedPAC wants to rebalance the MA benchmark to reduce variation at the local level by using, you know, a couple different tools, a blend of per capita fee-for-service spending in a local area and some standardized national fee-for-service spending and use of a rebate at least 75%. And MedPAC predicts that this and a few other tweaks, like 2% discount, et cetera, could save Medicare about 2 percentage points compared with the current policy. So this to me feels like it's perhaps an overdue tweaking of the calculations that make MA work. And it's also, frankly, been a stimulant to help private plans sell the MA plans and get seniors hooked. And at the end of the day, this is a balancing of benefits and really trying to figure out what seniors need to really do the job of managing health.
Great. Thanks, Julie. And thank you for that dose of fiscal reality. Dave, what are your thoughts on how we should pay Medicare Advantage plans?
Forrest Gump said, stupid is as stupid does. I get a headache when I read these analyses of how Medicare comes up with these complex formularies for figuring out what they're going to pay for individuals, whether it's for a specific procedure, in this case, for a per member per month rate. You know,
benchmarks, variations, discounts, 2% adjustments. The smartest people in America sit on the other side of this and figure out how to game the system so they can get the most money in and make the most profits. And on top of everything else, and unfortunately MedPAC didn't address this in their report, is they're still linking the amount of payment per member per month payment for an MA plan to the regional price. We need to figure out how to do risk adjustment a whole lot better, and simpler needs to be a word here or a concept here that gets brought into this. I, for the life of me, don't know why we just don't go back to the old group ratings that we used to use to assess insurance risk in the commercial market and in the government market, and then let everybody compete on a level playing field. The way the government's doing now, you've got people in Baltimore tweaking all this stuff and figuring they can outsmart the marketplace, and that's just never going to happen. One other thing on MedPAC, as long as we're talking about them, they've come out recently with a paper on alternative payment models, and I think do make the very good point that there are too many of them, and we need to dramatically simplify and expand the alternative payment models that we're using so that we can use them to drive better outcomes at lower cost. That same logic applies to Medicare Advantage pricing as much as it does to alternative payment models.
Right. Complex formula equals too many loopholes. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
I would just double down on what Dave was talking about with the alternative payment models. CMS, or I guess CMMI, has trialed 54 models over the last decade, and only 4 have been permanently encoded in Medicare. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. I think experimentation is good. But I get concerned when you think about what it means to be a provider. First of all, we do believe that these models have the power to change provider practice patterns, but their effects are super challenging and sometimes tricky to measure. And some of these models are setting up conflicting incentives. So imagine being a physician with multiple health plans that you have to manage to, with potentially multiple formularies, multiple incentive programs like what we're talking about. There are now innovative companies that are creating platforms to try to help a physician make sense of all this in the background through their algorithms and analysis, and be able to serve up to a physician, based on everything we're seeing in the background here, here's what you should do with this patient, and here's how you're going to maximize your revenue, Dr. X. So I actually think that those innovations are good because doctors are suffering. And I think that, you know, overall, if CMMI can start to pull back on fewer APMs, it would be net positive for what they're really trying to achieve with practice goals from physicians.
Yeah, another healthcare cottage industry, right? Thanks to the government. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, what's in your healthcare news tickler file next week?
Gosh, I'm going to jump on another IPO. I think if you look at what's happened in the last month or so, we've had some doozies, and it's continuing to drive up price expectations. So why not?
Right. We haven't talked about that Doximity IPO. Maybe we'll get to that in a week or so.
Or Bright Health.
Or Bright Health, exactly. Dave, what are healthcare people a Twitter about next week?
Well, the big HIMSS conference is going to run from August 9th to 13th in Las Vegas, just where I want to be in August, right? Las Vegas, when it's probably going to be 120 degrees. And by next week, we should have some early registration numbers. And I'm very curious to see where the healthcare conference marketplace is going to be coming out of COVID. And this is going to be the first real indicator of the extent to which we're back in the convening business or the extent to which we aren't.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.